My name is Damon, and I am an alcoholic. I want to let you know what that means. What that means for me is that alcohol is not my problem. I don't know. I quit a number of times, and then I would get that little restless, that little irritable, that little discontent. It'd build up, you know, for a little bit. You know, it's like a pressure cooker, you know. And then I'd take that drink and, you know. But the problem was is that after a time, I became bodily different than my fellows. And once I ingest drug alcohol into my body, something happens. Got a lot of theories about it, but all I know is that I become a different person, and I cannot tell what that person's going to do. Cannot make any predictions about that, and I can no longer safely take alcohol into my system. That's what it really means that I am an alcoholic. And it also means that left among my own devices, I will go back to restless, irritable, and discontent. And that's why I don't stay sober, but we do. And if I stay connected to the we, then we can stay sober together. My sobriety date is August the 10th of 2004. And I do want to thank Jerry for this, for inviting me here. In fact, I was thinking about what my qualifications are, and all I can tell you is you need to ask Jerry because he invited me. So. But if it says, what do I have to say about relationships? Is there any qualifications for that? And that's that I had a lot of trouble with twisted relations. And I think every one of us does. I think clinically I heard Burns Brady, who's a medical doctor and addictionologist, talking about that 100% of alcoholics who come in have problems with relationships. And but the reason I talk about this is I always like to find out how can I be helpful, how can I be useful. And for some reason, a lot of people call me up and ask me about relationships. I can tell you this, my wife and I are married 33 years, it'll be 34 years in October. I cannot take credit for that. I like the guy, though, who said we just never decided to divorce each other at the same time. But also, before we got married, we did something that's really amazing. We said to each other that divorce is not an option. And this is not putting anybody down who's had divorce. Believe me, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying for some reason both of us believed that from the very beginning. And we've held to it. And I think the other thing about my wife is she's just stubborn. You know, she just is stubborn, which is I thought was a fault. And now I'm so glad she did because we're still together. And so we come in with these twisted relationships. And what this program talks about is having a complete psychic change. Now, if you're a newcomer, this is not something you can go to Walgreens and get. It's not about tweaking the volume and the treble. It's not about just making small adjustments, I don't think. It's something that is a profound alteration in our reactions to life. And that is not an overnight matter. But I know when I've had those, when I'm looking at the relationships I have. And I'll tell you something, as I started out, when I first was asked about this topic and I picked it, it was going to be a whole lot different than it is right now because I was going to be talking a lot about the traditions and the concepts. We do a lot with the steps, not a lot with the traditions and concepts. And I find them to be one of the greatest things I ever did was start practicing the traditions in my life. But I realized that there was a couple of things I really needed to know first. What is it that I have a relationship with? And I thought about all these different people, the job, the data, all of these different things, and I realized that what it came down to, what this program taught me, is that there is one key fundamental relationship. What I have today is a kit of tools that have been given to us, and I think it's even more deep than that. I think because this book has been translated into 60 or 70 different languages in so many different countries, that what Bill must have tapped into is the actual toolbox itself, the original source of all the tools. And that is, to me, the innermost self. It's a natural state, a place where I can always go pick up the tool. It's there. What I didn't realize is I needed, though, something for this, the thing that had to concede that I'm an alcoholic. See, there's got to be two of me. If I have to fully concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, there has to be two of me. The one that concedes in the innermost self. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm also going to talk about what the book says about healthy relationships. The reason I'm doing this as a PowerPoint is because we're going to be going through a lot of things that are in the book. And they're in different places in the book. And we would all have had to have books, and there'd be a lot of rattling around. And I debated a lot of different ways of doing this. And I've actually done this, I've practiced this 6 times, and each one was different. So this is going to be the 7th different one. So twisted relations. I love it. But it was from twisted relations with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. Any show of hands? Yeah. All right. I see some identification out there. We have been especially stupid. Other people are stupid. We're especially stupid. You know, and stubborn about them. Now, the thing about stubborn is, early on in my sobriety, I wondered, what's the difference between stubborn and steadfast? And it turns out, I go back, I love word etymology, which is the root of words. And stubborn is an Anglo-Saxon word, and it comes from stump-like. Okay? We were stump-like. Okay? A stump is something that was there for a useful purpose. The tree has fallen over, and now it's just stuck there. Have anybody here tried to get rid of a stump? Yeah. That's a lot of work, you know? So, so what's the difference? And steadfast is the same kind of root as homestead, okay? To set out to a new design for living, a new life, okay? So I can be steadfast in the program without being stubborn. I can go from stubborn to steadfast. So the primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. As I mentioned earlier, about getting pleasure by sneaking around. And if you're going to sneak around and not get caught, it's very good not to have any connections with anybody, because they're just going to find you. So I started clipping every thread that I had connecting me to the world. I think we as alcoholics are some of the loneliest creatures in the world when we're in our cups. Okay? And what Chuck Chamberlain said, that there's one problem that involves all problems, includes all problems. There's one answer that includes all answers. And he talked about the feeling of conscious separation from. I don't know that I'm ever consciously separated from everything, but I get a feeling of being consciously separated from. And what today is happening is that I've learned not to act on my feelings, that I act on something different. It says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. This is from We Agnostics, page 52. This is what they sometimes call the bedevilments. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That was the good news. So they tell us also from the clinical side, almost 100% of alcoholics who come in are suffering some form of depression. The majority of those people who are suffering depression, the depression is part of the alcoholism. There are a few who come in where depression is a separate thing entirely. But in so many ways, for me, I was in a deep state of depression when I came here, isolated out. I was alone. I'd read about every book in the house, and including my wife's romance novels. And by the way, guys, if you want to find out what's really expected of you as a man, just try reading a romance novel. The ladies are laughing for a reason. But there's also a neat thing here. We had a feeling of uselessness. There's a very interesting sentence in the Promises. It says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity. Anybody an English major around here? It should be those feelings of uselessness and self-pity, unless they're one thing. So if I can become useful, self-pity goes away. So I knew when I was in my drinking, I knew that to be helpful, was where the solution was. My mom had a natural state of being was to be of service. That's who she was. I knew it was there. But you see, I was an atheist when I came in here. I was not only sure there was no God, I was sure I could convince you there was no God. So I could go to church and try and be useful. Because then I'm going to become the project. And that's the last thing I wanted, was to become the project. I didn't want anybody to help me. I just wanted to help other people. You know, sort of a one-sided deal. I tell you guys what to do, and you get all helped out, and I don't have to listen to anything. Sound alcoholic? Yeah, that was it. Thank you. This is part of my qualifications for being up here. So now, this is also from How It Works page. It's right there in pages 64 and 65. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. She looks burned up, doesn't she? You know? And that's what it was. It got to be a lot of work to carry around all of these resentments, because I have to go to court with the resentments. I've got to defend them in court. You know, I've got to explain it to other people and explain why I get to keep this resentment. I have these guys that come in with their fourth step, and I go, don't worry, you won't be able to make a case where you get to keep the resentment. So don't worry about it. The alcoholic is like the tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. I had relationships, but the sweet part was gone. You know, the stump was left. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. And you know what was stirring it up all the time? Me trying to manage other people. See, when I was trying to manage people, and nobody gave me the authority to manage them. And what I'd wanted is, I didn't want them to behave differently. I wanted the way I thought I would feel when they behaved differently. Now, I was listening to a speaker, and he said, you know, there was never enough. It was always too little or too much. I could never hit the middle. And this is, you know, when I got a new car, I got my first new car, I drove it out of the parking lot. Before I could get it out, it was a Grand Am, there's a Bonneville sitting there. Already, I've not even driven it out of the parking lot. And already I'm wanting something more. You know, so much of this disease is the disease of not enough. You know? And that I didn't have enough. You know, I did my master's in marketing research, and the thing about the TV commercials is they're saying, you're not enough, you don't have enough. You're not enough, you don't have enough. If you had this, you'd have enough, you'd be enough. You know? And my wife and I, we cut off the cable TV 10 years ago, and it's been a blessing. Because I thought I was immune to those messages. And it turns out it'd be like a doctor saying he's immune to cancer because he knows how to treat it. You know, I have to be careful today what I pour into my brain. You know, I came in here like a water tower with sludge down in the bottom of it. You know, that was all that was left. And then you guys started pouring the clean water in. And today I try and control what I pour in there. I really do. I'm picky and choose about what I listen to. So that's that turmoil. That's why I'm stirring up. I'm stirring up the pot because I'm trying to make things different so I will feel better. As my sponsor used to say all the time, oh, yeah, I get it. It's all about you. Okay, now we got it straight. So coming to his senses, this is from the fifth step. It's an Into Action, page 73. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. Anybody been there? Yeah. All right, these memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him, as we said before. You know, I might have gotten caught. Oh, no, you know, it's all right to sneak around, just don't get caught. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. I don't know if anybody else, but sometimes I would wake up in the morning, I'd have that little moment of clarity. I would know exactly what I'd been doing, how I'd been messing up my life, everything else. It was like that, and I would drink to cover it up. Well, on August the 12th of 2004, after having 1 hour of sleep, my usual 1 hour of sleep, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I hadn't had a drink for 2 days. I was kicking on my own. As Chuck Chamberlain said, that damnable necessity to lick this thing on my own. You know, and here I was, and I was spent. And I said the three-word prayer of an atheist. And I said, I need help. And I said it deep. And I've only come to recognize in the last couple of years that since that time, I've never had the obsession to drink. I know this today. It wouldn't have lasted if I hadn't have come into this program and got connected with you people so that we could stay sober together. But something happened then. A willingness came into me. See, I got tired of telling lies. I was about to go to... I told my wife that I was going to go see the behavioral therapist, and I had made an appointment, and I had not made the appointment. And I had a chance that I was going to have to lie to her one more time. And I decided, I can't do it anymore. That my mama raised me better than that, I guess. Maybe her prayers came through. And I said, well, then, what do I not lie about? Been lying about so much. I'd been going to strip bars. I'd been going to massage parlors, and I'd justified that, saying, "Oh, I'm relieving my wife of the pressure." You know, from, you know, they have concubines in Japan and China. I had a little problem. I wasn't in Japan or China. My wife was not Japanese or Chinese. Rationalization and justification. As Clancy said, that the mind, when faced with sufficient conflict, will alter its view of reality in order to resolve the conflict. If I get under enough pressure, I will go back there. So much about this is just in that tenth step, catching it early before the pressure builds up, before I have to take a drink again. So, we learn this is the relationship between me and my alcoholism. I need to understand that first. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. And I was not an alcoholic during the 80s. I drank responsibly. You know, I didn't do any. The last drugs I did was in 83, smoked a joint on the way to Mardi Gras. Didn't do anything for me. But somehow in the end of the 80s, I started looking what was wrong with my life, what was wrong with my wife, what was wrong with my job. Bill Wilson had read the book called The Varieties of Religious Experience. It was given to him by Abby Thatcher shortly after, and sometime in that first couple of weeks in December, right after he had had his hot flash. And in that book, William James, who was known as the father of American psychology, had done a 7-part lecture in Edinburgh, Scotland. And what he spent, it starts off, by the way, if you go to read it, it starts off like an old car in winter, you know, because he spends a lot of time getting cranked up. And what he's doing is he's telling people what he's not going to talk about. He's not going to talk about dogma. He's not going to talk about religion. He's not going to talk about structure. He's going to talk about what were the personal experiences that each of these people had that he was looking at. And they shared two major things in common that I find from the book. The first is, you don't find God on the mountaintops, you find him in the valleys. You don't find God on a really good day. So when people come up to me and say, "Man, I had a really bad day," I go, "Great." You know, I'm about to lose my house. Fantastic. And they think I'm being cruel and I'm being real. Because if you're there, you got a chance to get rid of it, whatever it was that has driven you to this situation. You got a chance for a new freedom and a new happiness. So he talks about the second thing is the shift from pessimism to optimism. And here I went the other way around. I was an optimistic guy in the 80s. And then I started doing all these things that started kicking in my guilt, and then I drank to cover up my guilt, and then I contracted alcoholism and I became bodily different. A non-alcoholic, as I understand it, takes a few drinks, they feel out of control. I started drinking to feel in control. This is the relationship between me and my alcoholism. I have to know that if I take a drink of alcohol, I become a different person. And I can no more decide what that guy's going to do after or he takes a drink, then I could decide what any one of you is going to do. That is for me the great, that is a great reality right there. I will never, ever be able to successfully drink again. And the greatest news is this disease is unlike a lot of different diseases. The sufferer is better off after recovery than they were before they contracted the disease. Because I have to have a spiritual awakening in order to do that. And that makes me a lot better off. So this complete psychic change for me is this whole idea that insanity is a lack of proportion. And this is me having a little bit of fun playing around. I've got 7 different kinds of things. And there's this, you could break it up any way you wanted to, but it was just some of the examples of the kinds of things. On the left-hand side, I have the things that were way too important in my life. And on the right side, those things were way too small. And what's happened is I don't eliminate the stuff on the left-hand side. I get it back into proportion. Let's talk about it. That which concedes to my innermost self and my innermost self. That which concedes is the life support system for this vehicle I'm riding around in. We call it sometimes the ego. The ego does some amazing things. One of the things I have done in my sobriety is to be a caregiver once a week for folks, non-medical home health care. And I got a chance to be a caregiver for a guy who was like Forrest Gump with a degree in fluid dynamics. I mean, this guy met everybody. He negotiated with Howard Hughes. He was in NASA before it was NASA, all the way through Skylab. He lived across the street from Alan Shepard. I mean, he helped Jackie and Aristotle and NASA decorate their plane, you know, all of these things. And it was some amazing things that the ego could do. I know this, that he was missing a lot of the spiritual component in his life. And there is some amazing things we've done. We've gone to the moon. We've built the interstate systems. We've done healthcare. We're really working on getting cancer out of the way. We're doing that. That is the same thing there that does those things, and it's a wonderful tool. I don't want to give it a bad rap. It's amazing. It's one of the great things that really makes us human. But not letting it rule the thing. It can't be in control anymore. The innermost self has to give the directions. See, this is the awakening. I think the innermost self is that which awakens in me as a result of these steps. And it's uncovered. It's always been there. It was just covered up with pomp and circumstance, as Bill talks about. On the left-hand side, I've also got the judge and the witness. Why the judge here? You know, in the Garden of Eden, there's a wonderful symbol of two trees, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I didn't get the fruit for the longest time. But you see, my ego is fed by judging other people, and not their actions, but their character. Who gives me the right to judge the character of another human being? And what, based on my history, as you've just heard it, who am I to tell anybody? You know, as Bill calls it, the toss pot calling the kettle black. And the toss pot was this metal thing they had behind the bar where you just threw all the leftover drinks and food into. You know, and that's what it would be like. Who am I to judge? You know? Now, at the same time, I do have to be discerning. I'm not going to give certain people the key to my house. But it was way out of proportion. You see, and I was judging for all the wrong reasons. I was judging out of fear. It would be unkind for me to give somebody access to all my stuff if they were not going to be doing what they needed to do with it for themselves. It's what is my motivation now. I do need to be discerning, but I need to be more of a witness than a judge. I need to be observant of the universe. I need to just enjoy and acknowledge the universe, to look around the room and look at things without naming them. To just observe and enjoy this universe, the way it's put together, without trying to good, bad. This whole thing about good, bad, what happens is I get kicked out of the presence of God and I've got to go fend for myself with the locusts and the crops and the whole deal. And the minute I stop judging, I come back into the garden. I come back into the presence of God. So many of my problems, how many of your own problems, look deeply inside yourself, how many started out with an opinion, a negative opinion about another person? I have never gotten in trouble by having a positive opinion about you. See, and he said, oh, well, I might risk, I might be in. And I got a really big God. takes care of all the things I need, and I can always have positive opinions about you. And I have one really big negative opinion. Well, I got two negative opinions. One of them is about beef liver, but that's not here or there. It tastes like it came out of a dead animal, folks. It really does. But the other negative opinion is about negative opinions. And I'm okay to have a negative opinion about negative opinions. Now, this other part is me and the others. Just like my sponsors, or my little grandson going, mine, you know, me. It's all about me. You know, and that works when we're little kids, when we have to be demanding to get the stuff we want. But it's time to grow up. You know, and it's time to think of others. You see, Marcus Aurelius was the emperor of Rome, and he was a Stoic philosopher. And he said, what good are the upper teeth without the lower teeth? Who would I be without everything? What do I really own? You know, what do I really, you know, what? It's to me, it's really that. The other thing is this knowledge on one side and awareness on the other. I think knowledge is a wonderful thing, but I have to really keep it in perspective. There's very little that I really know. I once wrote a poem that says, leaves are not green. The light hits the leaf, and the leaf absorbs certain photons, and then it reflects everything else off. So what I'm seeing is what the leaf is not. The suchness of the leaf is unknowable. There's something out, you know, you guys are largely theoretical to me. What I think you're thinking about me right now is not what you're thinking about me. What I think you've been through in your lives is not what you've been through. It comes out to be astonishingly difficult to prove there's anything out there beyond my own senses. I like the little Chinese monk who dreamed he was a butterfly, woke up the next morning and wondered, maybe I'm a butterfly dreaming I'm a monk. How could I possibly tell the difference? And here's where my opinions come in. I'm so certain about certain things, and yet there's very few I can be certain. The German philosopher is called the one, the phenomenal, the world of the senses, the movie screen in the head with all the senses and everything else. And they called the suchness of the leaf out there the noumenal. The thing that is beyond reach. I could get another measuring device, but then I'd have to use my eyes or my touch to, you know, I can't know that. There is one thing about the noumenal I can know, though. I am. You know? Be still and know that I am. And if you're not astonished by that statement, look around. We're sending out probes. We're trying to find people, just bodies or living creatures, something like this, and all these living planets nearby and everything. We can't find anything. You know? So, to me, I love the knowledge, but I can know only a little. What I can do is become more and more aware, just aware, and spend more time in awareness and less time. And just get a little more proportion in it. I need to spend more time in the now and less time in today and tomorrow. How many people had trouble sleeping and they drank? Yeah, getting a few hands out there. And wasn't it the past and the future on the ceiling that we're arguing with? How much time? Where am I going to live? Where do I plant my feet today? Do I plant it in yesterday and tomorrow? Which, by the way, are paper dolls and coloring crayons. My past, as I remember it, never happened. Okay? But there is something real about my past. Whatever my wife is thinking about me right now in my past is part of my real past. If it's now, it's real. Whatever anybody here might be remembering about my past, then that's part of my past now. My son, if he happens to be thinking about me now, there's this collective consciousness about my past. And you know what's amazing? My past is changing all the time. Because of this program, they look at my past differently. Feelings. Ann Smith said something very amazing. She said, feelings are the fruit, not the root of my faith. That was Dr. Bob's wife. And what that means for me is, feelings are the physiological reaction of the body to a thought. We have a machine to measure it. It's called a lie detector. hook somebody up to a lie detector, you ask them a few questions, it goes off the chart. And then my mind looks at the thing going up and down, and then I think about that, and then it goes off even more. There's a feedback loop, like taking this microphone and sticking it up to the speaker. Don't worry, Victor, I'm not going to do it. But it's like that. It's a big feedback loop, and I have to break out of it. How many people drank because of your feelings? You know? And if I don't know where they're coming from, they could be unconscious thoughts or conscious. I don't know what the thought, I don't know where they came from. What she's saying is to act on principles. So if I act on principles just each time through the day, then at the end of the day, I can reach up and pluck the succulent fruit of a day well spent. I harvest my feelings. I do not act upon them. That's my goal, at least. Sometimes those little guys are tricky. But to get more and more to where I'm less and less on my feelings and more on intuition, which is a different thing. It's that thing that's uncovered. It's the thing that Steve was talking about last night. It's the sometimes the first thing I know now is the right thing. I get that. And then the last is managing versus wondering on. Now, what in the world? Managing is when I'm not satisfied with the way things are, so I've got to manage it. I've got to change people around. I've got to do this and this, and then I'll be happy. What I realize today is this moment is perfectly this moment. I am perfectly me at this moment. There's nobody more perfectly me at this moment than me. Now, what I'm not is I'm never what I thought I was going to be yesterday. So what I had is this concept that we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection is kind of was disturbing in some ways to me until I realized, because when I began to sense the awakening, the spirit seemed so perfect. And it is. I can't claim it. The thing that has to concede to the innermost self wants to own it, wants to claim it, wants to take credit for the perfection of the spirituality, and it wasn't. It was a gift. You see, what I've come to realize is the word creator in the big book is a very big word, and it simply means I did not create me. Everything I am is a gift. I didn't pick my parents. I didn't pick the school that I went to. I didn't pick the way I react and respond to the world. Everything I am is a gift. And it's very hard for pride to take purchase in that soil. And I just have to keep reminding me, I did not create me. And so I get into wonder and awe. And when I'm in wonder and awe, acceptance is a fallback position, folks. It's a step along the way to wonder and awe, but I don't want to live a life of acceptance. I want to live a life of wonder and awe. And when I'm in wonder and awe, I don't need a drink. I don't need to impress you. I don't need to try and figure out what you're thinking of me. I'm just in wonder and awe at being alive. Every day is a gift. I was thinking of killing myself in that deep depression that I was in. So every day is a gift. So I had to make a decision. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. This is a great sentence. This is a great reason for stopping doing something. It didn't work. I never actually got people to do the things the way I wanted them to do them so I would feel the way I was going to feel. And then I kept doing it again and again and again. It's like slipping on the banana peel. After a while, it just gets funny. You know, how many times do we do it? And we're, as it says, we're especially stupid on this regard. You know, I was. I know that. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life where I'm trying to bend the actor, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. Instead of trying to be the actor on the stage, I'm going to be trying to be in the background, trying to make sure everybody has a good time. I don't need to have my name on the program or the name on the marquee. I can be anonymous without name. He is the father. We are his children. I've got a grandson, and it's such a delight. You know, with my daughter, one time when she was 15, I said, I'm through being your father, I'm just going to be a resource. And she went, whew. And we both went, you know, just like that. Because I don't have any, I can't manage her, you know. I can be a resource for her. And that's all my job is to be the best resource I can be for her. So what about these tools laid at our feet? They're not tools in the material sense. My ego wants to think that. They're not something that I carry around with me. They're gifts. I think that ultimately this toolbox is the source of all the principles that we know that start religion, that start all of these things. Because I read a lot, I'm an old history major, and I see these things cropping up across cultures and across time. Love. You know, quality. Kindness. All of these things come back eventually. We go off in tangents like Hitlerism and other things, and they always snap back to those really fundamental principles. And I think they're deep down inside each and every one of us. And I'll tell you, these laws are justice without judgment, as Chuck Chamberlain calls it. If I were to take this water bottle and drop it, we would not have to have a court of law to see whether the law of gravity was going to be applied in this case. It's the same way with kindness. If I'm kind to you, it doesn't matter whether you're kind back to me, the universe is going to be kind to me as a result. It's instantaneous. There's two real principles for me that are easy because they connect to everything else, and that's kindness and integrity. Those are complex little words. Kindness comes from kin. I love the root words, which means family. So if I see each and every one of you as family, then it's very easy to be kind. What's the difference between two cells in my body, my heart, and my lungs, and you and me? Where do we have this dividing? I like this concept of Gaia, a whole living planet upon which all of us are part. So I intuitively know how to handle situations reducing. I rely on this. The power behind these principles, there's something more than that. I recognize I got a very sneaky God, but I don't try and understand it anymore. You see, when I really realize is that I was trying to understand God, and I found God between my thoughts, not in them. I found God between my feelings, not in them. I ask you this question. What is it about you that is unchanged since your earliest memories? Take away everything that's ever changed. What's left? For me, that's the thing that awakens. That is my awareness of my awareness of my awareness. And Bill talks about that many different ways. So what is AA? AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. What a promise. I get all of that from this. And AA's 12 traditions apply to the life of the fellowship itself. They outline the means by which AA maintains its unity and relates itself to the world about it, the way it lives and grows. And then I just put my own name in there. And I say, they outline the means by which I maintain my unity and how I relate myself to the world about me, how I live and grow. This is, of course, from 12 and 12, that forward on page 15. So what's in this kit of spiritual tools? We have the steps. We've already talked about the first three, really. Steps 4 through 9 are about responsibility and authority for me. I was taking responsibility for things I didn't have any authority over, and things weren't going well. And then I had responsibility and authority for things, and I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And my life was unmanageable, and I wasn't getting what I was supposed to get. If I get in alignment, who gave me the authority? Do I have the responsibility? If I've got both the responsibility and the authority together, then it'll turn out great. Especially for me in this sense. God's will for me is not a what. God's will for me is a how. I can do anything I want to do as long as I can do it with kindness and integrity. I cannot rob a bank with kindness and integrity. I cannot gossip behind your back with kindness and integrity. And this is where free will and God's will for me, not speaking for anybody else but me, this is where it makes it very clear and very easy. So I got an infinite number of directions I can go from here. Half of them match kindness and integrity, half of them do not. So I've just eliminated half of an infinite number of things I can do, and if anybody's good at math, half of infinity is infinity. I haven't narrowed my options at all. I can do an infinite number of things, and the results will always be favorable. This doesn't block my freedom. This opens up. And then I can get out of the outcomes business. I can just be in the process business. I trust this process, and then the outcomes will take care of themselves every single time. Step 10, the lather, rinse, repeat. This is where I could use up a whole bottle of shampoo if I followed those directions. You know, just keep emptying, lather, rinse, repeat. But it's the same idea on the 10th step. I take these very same things and I keep doing them. Just keep doing them. And in the 12 and 12 and step 10 and what Sandy Beach talks about, there's a new game in town. The least disturbed wins. See, because if I get restless, irritable, and discontent, eventually I'm going to change my mind about drinking. So I need to do this here. And Sandy says it very well. He says, why do we always choose forgiveness last? I'm eventually going to forgive them. You know, I'm just going to have to. Why do I always choose it last? Sandy had his daughter murdered in March of, I believe, of 2010. And he was able to forgive the murderer the day it happened. Not because of something he learned. He's something he saw on TV, some lady who did it back in Washington some number of years before. See, I forgive people not because they deserve to be forgiven necessarily. I don't have to worry about that. I just deserve to be a forgiving person. And if I am in the wrong, I need to make amends. I just and just try and do those things. And this turns out, sounds like a hard thing to do. This is the easiest thing I've ever done. We talk about the easier, softer way. They're not kidding. It's much easier to do that than try and justify my case for holding on to a resentment. And then prayer and meditation. Praying only for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. It's interesting, the Lord's Prayer disturbed me because it said, lead us not into temptation. And I'm like, that's not the God I know. And then I was listening to Chuck Chamberlain in a retreat he did in 1963, and he found a guy who was an expert in Aramaic. And the guy said, that's not what it says. It says, thou leadest not into temptation. See, and I had already been putting the word you in front. You lead us not into temptation. You deliver us from evil. See, that's the God of my understanding. And it turns out, that's the way it was written to begin with. See, the God of my understanding, the prayers I love are the prayers of acknowledgement. Just all I really need to do is acknowledge God. That's all I need to do. And I acknowledge God, the Creator, by acknowledging creation. God is everything or He's nothing. So whatever I acknowledge, I'm acknowledging God. There is wonder in everything. Each one of these chairs you're sitting in has probably got an amazing story behind it. Do you know that stars had to explode in order for those chairs to be created? They all started out with hydrogen only. You had to have a collapsing star explode to turn and make the metals and materials not only that they're made of, but that we're made of. You know, we are all star stuff. Back to wonder and awe. So in the 12th step, you know, in meditation for me, by the way, meditation is something I just do through the day. And it's just an acknowledging of God. And it's stillness, being quiet. Go to the long line at Walmart. I go into the bank to do my business. Slow it down. Anybody have a racing mind when they came in here? Slow it down. Pause. Pause everything. That's the beauty. I can do a magic trick today. I can just stop my thinking 15, 20 seconds at a time. It's like a magic trick for an alcoholic. The St. Francis Prayer, I urge you to look at that prayer. That prayer has got two components. It's got the component, the first, which is how do I respond to life? Where there is hatred, may I... And I like the Catholic version, so love. I had a recent case here where I worked for a client, this is one of the programmers, and he just disagreed with something I designed in the database, and he sent back in great big red letters, bullshit, in the email back to me. Now, I don't know about you, but with me, the thing that's left in my pride is my professionalism. You know, and I found out that if I'm a cloud, it's like swinging a baseball bat at a cloud when I'm really spiritual. It's just not going to hurt me. But when I'm putting on a mask, those arrows have a tendency just to stick right in that mask that I'm wearing. And so, yeah, it affected me, you know. But then I didn't do anything. I did restraint of pen and tongue and email. And... And I paused when agitated or doubtful. And I began to think about what really disturbed me. And you know what disturbed me? I like the guy. And I said to myself, you know, Bill, I like you, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. The next day I saw him. I didn't have a chance to talk to him before we got in the back seat, and the owner of the company was driving, and I looked over Bill, and I said, you know, I got to admire a guy that can put bullshit in big red letters in an email. And he laughed, and he said, I had a good time doing that. I said, I could tell. You know? And this week I took him out to lunch, paid for his lunch, and we got a great relationship. See, I could have destroyed that relationship. And you know what? And the other thing what I did that had to do with sowing love is when the owner said, what's wrong with this guy? And I said, don't worry, he's a professional. He does a really good job. He's quick at what he's doing. He's a professional. I sowed love. See, what I look for is I look for the good in him, and I didn't need to tell Bill about it. Because when somebody's in that mode, they're not going to believe it. They're going to believe that I'm just brown-nosing up to them. What I did is I told the most important person in that whole situation the best thing I could about him. And it wasn't hard. It would have been hard to do it the other way. Because I'd still be working on that one. The 12th step is so much about acknowledging the presence of God. And when I'm there, it becomes very easy to carry this message to the alcoholic like I did, you know, with this guy that showed up the other day. This morning, somebody asked me, he said, can I have about 5 minutes of your time? Sure. In 5 minutes, what he wanted me to tell him was my spiritual awakening in 5 minutes. We took about 30. I haven't been able to do that in 5 minutes yet. But it's all about also being of service. You know, a great name for me was User. You know, I used up relationships, I used up jobs, I used up opportunities, and it was all about this. So much of this is becoming a giver. The world gives to a giver. It really does. And I'm tapped into this thing I'm giving out of is not a bucket. It does not empty. It's a conduit, a channel of peace. That's what we're tapped into. And I just need to practice these things. I'm just briefly going to touch on the traditions. The very first tradition is about unity, and we touched on that kindness. Kindness is kin. So kindness and unity, it's a really way, when I'm really treating the world as I'm all part of that one, I'm being kind to it. The third one is, I don't want to have any membership rules for you to be a friend of mine. I'm going to throw out my membership rules. Oh, I'm not going to associate with that. No. You're my friend if you want to be, no rules. Even if you don't want to be, you're my friend. And I don't want to ever be personally punitive. I don't care what you do to me. I don't need to get back at you. There's no reason. It doesn't work. I have to quit playing God. It doesn't work. I got to be fully self-supporting. That's not only monetarily, that's emotionally as well. I don't need to have anybody validate me. Because, by the way, whatever you're thinking of me is not what I think you're thinking of me is not. It's not that it's unimportant, it's just unknowable. I was trying to manage the unknowable. So now I'll tell you what's life and death for me, and that's what I think of you. That I can manage. So if I can think good thoughts about you, then I got a chance at this thing. No opinion on outside issues. That's that whole thing I talked about with the Garden of Eden and the eating of the fruit. I don't need to do that. Tradition 12. I am not my name. I cannot define me. I am not my job. I am not a home. You know, it's that thing that what the essence of who I am is beyond name. That innermost self is beyond name. I can't take credit for it, but I also can't figure out exactly what to call it either. And when I'm in that mode, I know I'm in the right space. When I can't put a finger on it, I know I'm in the right place. I'm on the right track. So that's all. That's traditions 1, 3, 7, 10, and 12. And then I'm going to deal with a couple of the concepts. Concept 3 is the right of decision. My wife goes to Walmart and she picks up tea for me, I happen to be a tea drinker, I don't complain about the tea she picks up. I let her have the right of decision that way. You know, these are just little tiny things I do. The right of participation. Everyone in the family, try not to make unilateral decisions. When I do, I get into trouble. A right of appeal. You know, that when we have a majority decision and someone, one person, doesn't agree, I need to find out why. I need to ask that in all of my relations, especially as I'm working in business. I always want to know what the guy, what is it? Because a lot of times I'll reverse decisions because that person's got really something significant to say. We realize we know only a little. And concept nine, leadership at all levels is indispensable. It's very important for me to learn how to be a better leader. And a leader is a servant. There's a great book, by the way, if you get a chance, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. If you get a chance, it's a great thing to read, regardless of what you're doing. A lot of people, how many people are familiar with the warranties? These are an amazing set. This is actually, you'd have to have a 3/4 vote of all of the groups in AA in order to change these. And they're in this 112 concept. Never become the seat of perilous wealth or power. I don't need to be that in my family. I manage the finances, but it's there to be of service, not to be used as a weapon. Not to exert any power that way, because then I'm back to trying to manage. And I need to just be a resource. And what I'm responsible to do is the best things I can. I've got some investments, other things. I need to watch them, take care of them, be prudent. That's my responsibility today. And that's it. Be prudent financially. These are all things in this 12 concept. None to be in a position of unqualified authority. I don't want to be that. We want to have a discussion and vote wherever possible by substantial unanimity. That needs to be in my family and with my personal relations. To never be personally punitive. To never perform acts of government. I don't need to be able to tell, and I don't do this with sponsors and sponsees either. I tell people, I say, I love the advice that Father Joseph Martin said. He said, the best advice I can give you is don't give any advice. If I don't have experience in it, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I really, it doesn't do me any good to try and be an active government and try and govern people and tell them what to do. You know, it'd be only for my own gratification. I really just love this idea about just telling people what I did. Attraction rather than promotion. Remain democratic in thought and action. And Bill's, this is what Abby told Bill on page 13 in Bill's story. My friend promised, when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator and creation. That I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. You know, I got rid of all my problems and I did it that quick. I renamed them all situations. That's all they were. Just ask everybody in the world if my problems were their problems. No, they're just situations. And that when I'm able to do that, stop giving them name power. Power gives that, calling something a problem gives it a power it doesn't deserve. All it is a situation. I've never solved a problem. I've been able to look at and address situations. What is it that awakens? This is a quote from Bill. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. This is from page 567 of The Spiritual Awakening. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. So what does the program literature say about healthy relationships? I love this line from the Step 8, page 77, the 12 and 12. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. I got a goal. I'd love to meet everybody in Cobb County. No, nothing against Bartow. I live in Cobb. Just have fun. Just meet everybody in Cobb. You know? I think that'd be great. I haven't truly met an evil person, not a truly evil person. I've met some very lost souls. Jesus said on the cross, forgive them for they know not what they do. And I used to say to guys, you know, during their fourth step, well, if this person, you know, nailed you to some wood, you know, to a cross or something like that, then maybe you have a right to have a resentment. And then I got a guy who came up and said that some guys in the hood thought he knew where the drug money was, took him downstairs into an abandoned apartment and nailed him to the wall. Whoa. Turns out all of them have died from the disease and violence. He's alive, and you know what? I watched him forgive those guys. Wow. Where else but in this program could I have an opportunity to see that? Say one thing just out of my mouth intellectually and then have, whoa. Really? He came out of the coma 9 months later. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. There is a solution, page 28. As soon as I'm honest and willing enough to try, I just need to try. Do I want to get along? Do I really want to have that moving and fascinating adventure? Or do I want to win an argument? Do I want to be right? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. And that's what the steps are there for. There's a Meister Eckhart in the 1200s who said that the spiritual growth is largely a process of subtraction, not addition. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact for our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. It's curious, this one, by the way. Into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous is also possible. I have no idea which way Bill wanted it. Kind of works both ways for me. I like it both ways. He's entered in my heart and our lives, and he's entered in my heart and he lives. Both ways. This is from page 64. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. They have many different traditions. Both the Hindus and the Islam says something similar to, a finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. The program is not in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. The recipe for building the program in me is in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a recipe. The cake is not in the recipe. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly, no kidding, constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. That's a complete psychic change, isn't it? Instead of asking what God can do for me, I'm supposed to ask what I can do for you each day. The answers will come if your own house is in order. They just come. See, the toolkit is God. He's the one with the toolbox. He is the toolbox. Every tool I have is just borrowed from that toolbox. And that's where the source of all the solutions for all my relationships are right there. They're laying at my feet, and they're different every time. I can't use the one I used yesterday on today's situation. I have to look at my feet today, ask God what's there today. It's a whole new combination of all of these little things. Can't use the same tool twice. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass to you, for you, and countless others. This is the great fact for us. You see, the spiritual life is not a theory. Everything else is. The only thing I know is that I am, and that the spiritual experience is real, deep, and effective. Everything else is changing and theoretical and knowledge-based. Everything else. Abandon yourself to God. Bill does not use the word surrender. He uses abandon. He uses rid. And I love that rid also is the initials for restless, irritable, and discontent. I mean, how appropriate. We had to be rid of these things, cast to one side. He talks about when he's talking about Carl Jung, the ideas, emotions, and attitudes of these men are suddenly cast to one side. When I'm through with this bottle, I throw it away. Don't have any need for it anymore. I abandon it. Surrender. I've talked with people in the military. When you surrender, you're supposed to keep on fighting if you can. I need to abandon. I need to be divorced from these old ways of thinking. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. And you know, trudge is an interesting word. It's Scandinavian. It means to walk like with snowshoes. Ever had any snowshoes on? You walk with purpose and slowly. Okay? And this is also my blessing to you today, which is may God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you all.